He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know.
Welcome in, everybody, to yet another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell, Taylor Williams with you on this Memorial Monday. Hope everyone has a great Memorial Day, and thank you to all of those who've made the sacrifice so that we can all live the lives that we live. Very important day in this country. Love Memorial Day and love those who've put it on the line for all of us. Taylor Williams with me. I am Colby Powell. Glad everyone is with us. It was a great weekend. It was a great Sunday. It was a great match. It Taylor, my expectations were high and they were exceeded. I thought the match yesterday was everything we could have asked for and then some.
I couldn't agree with you more, Colby. Yeah, I mean, we had talked for how many ever weeks now since the news came out about, you know, that how the format was all going to be constructed and how Brady and Manning were going to be joining Phil and Tiger during this match. And so we had talked, you know, all this different speculation, all this, you know, are they going to do it right? Are they going to be able to learn their lessons from not only the match but also the driving relief match a couple weeks ago? We wanted to see some improvements from the telecast. And I think they did, in all honesty, a hell of a job. I would give it. Whenever you include the telecast and the play that we got to see, and from all the excitement, the chatter, and everything, I think I'd give it an A, if not pretty close to an A plus.
Yeah, it's like the great Michael Scott once said. I thought maybe it would be an A, but I forgot that there was an A plus.
Is there an A plus plus?
Is there an A plus plus plus? Is the question? It was. I mean, it really was great. And Brady and Manning, Peyton can actually play a little bit. Tom. Maybe not so much, but Tom did give us all the shot of the day. Let's take a listen to what Tom Brady did yesterday on 7, keeping in mind that in the first 6 holes, he was probably about 16 over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, go in! Yeah. Oh, my goodness!
Oh, you made it!
Wow!
Check. Take a second at Chuck.
Me. Wow.
Hey, hey, yeah. hey.
Chuck.
Hey, man.
Chuck.
I got that's
Chuck.
Awesome.
Shut your mouth, Chuck. Take a little of that medicine. Get your butt out here.
Hey.
Wow.
That's what I needed.
Sauces it back in the hole.
Hey, way to get $100,000 for Brooks Koepka.
What a
thanks,
tasty
baby.
Morsel.
Brooks, take
wow.
Brooks, how about that?
Tom Brady, take a suck of that, Chuck.
Boy, he brought the heat, boy, didn't he?
He said, take a suck of that. What is that?
Dude, Chuck, what people aren't hearing before that is how much shit Chuck was talking on Brady about how he wants a piece of him and how, you know, he ain't brought it, you know. Like
he asked Tom how many strokes he won.
He was wanting to give – Charles Barkley, the most famous shitty golfer that we know, is trying to give Tom Brady strokes. And then – next thing you know, well, the problem for us when watching it, they had the up in the corner what shot he was hitting. They had that typed wrong because
it said third shot, but it was not.
They said third shot, and that was the third shot that we saw on the telecast, but it ended up being for birdie. So at the time, we thought it was for eagle because on the same hole, Tiger had what a 25-footer for eagle.
A little more than that, maybe, but somewhere in that range.
A chance where he had to. So at the time when he held it, thought he had a chance to tie, but it would have ended up being the win, but. But to see someone, you know, like Brady, who had been playing so horribly.
It was
the first,
so bad.
I mean, it was horrible.
He couldn't keep it on the course.
No, I mean, it was right every time, topping it. I mean, everything was just as bad as it could get. And then next thing you know, you get a little bit of smack talk in there, and then he does something like that. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was cool. It was probably about 100 yards, I think they said, and he just sauced a wedge back, just spun it right in the middle of the hole. I mean, it went in with some pace,
but
it hit dead center.
Oh, smack in the middle. One thing, too, is, I mean, you could hear how loud everyone reacted, too. Could you imagine if there was actually a little bit of gallery there?
Right.
What they would have reacted to do that?
Yeah, lost their mind.
I think they would have... A crowd would have got more excited if Manning or Brady hold it than a Tiger or Phil shot, I bet.
I think so, too, because you're expecting it so much less. I mean, the way Tom was playing, you're expecting this thing anywhere on the green is a really good shot for Tom.
Well, with Tom, you would honestly think that, you know, for safety precautions, stand as close to the flag as you can because, you know, you have the less chance to get hit from what we saw the first few holes. So.
Yeah, from what we saw earlier in the day, no doubt. And take a suck of that has to just be the greatest trash talk line.
It was so good, and especially to Charles, who, you know, he's notorious for his wannabe trash talking, and then he always kind of has it thrown back in his face somehow in one way or another. And we have a few lines from some other people that said, like JT, who called him a fat ass, so we have that line coming up later in the show. And so, I mean, you know, it seems like anytime Charles tries to throw anything out there, it kind of gets thrown back in his face. And it put a smile on my face to see Brady do that, even though I was rooting for Tiger and Peyton.
Yeah, the trash talk yesterday was grade A. Absolutely grade A. Here's Justin Thomas, like you mentioned, talking about Charles Barkley, you know, talking about people in other sports doing other things. Tiger hit a really good shot, and he's like, you know, if you saw a basketball player dunk a basketball, it wouldn't be that impressive. And here's what JT had to say.
Chuck, I'd love to see your fat ass try to dunk a basketball right now.
Hey, clear.
Dive.
JT, you can't call me fat on TV. That's bullying. I'm going to call HR on you.
You can't call me fat on TV. That's bullying. That's so good. I thought JT was good yesterday.
I think JT did do a good job. Yeah, I think it may have, you know, obviously it set him up for good. Well, it was kind of a good and a bad situation because he's a member there, so he knows a lot about the course. He gave some kind of good insights. So a couple of times he was like, you know, Phil hadn't played here very much, so he doesn't know that there's this ridge, or he doesn't know, you know, about this break, or about, you know, you can't aim here. And so I thought that was kind of cool insight. But also, too, he got thrown out on, you know, and one thing, too, that I thought also made the match really fun is that, you know, how many holes there in a row was it just pouring on him?
Oh, hard rain. I mean, was... We were lucky they played yesterday.
I was, yeah, I mean, what was it, 45, 50-minute delay?
About a 45, 50-minute delay, and then they still had to play in some pouring rain at times. If there had been any lightning in that, they would have been completely out of luck. The weather today, which was the makeup day, looked like a complete washout. Forecasted 6 inches of rain for today if they hadn't been able to get it in yesterday. So then we're looking at rescheduling for a different weekend, and it would have been an absolute disaster. So we're lucky they got to play, and I'm glad that they still went out and put on such a good show in the rain. It was kind of even cool whenever they were like hitting range balls and warming up in the rain and stuff. Made for some really good video and some good still shots as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, going back to the JT commentary thing, you know, he said that I was watching the kind of preview when it was in the rain the other day. He was like, yeah, they said broadcasting would be fun. And here they go. They throw me out here in this, you know, pouring down rain. I got an umbrella and it's still not doing it, you know, worth a damn at all. And so I thought that was kind of cool that he was throwing that experience. And I also really enjoyed seeing Brady and Manning, you know, who, you know, we'd seen them for years, you know, throw a football out there and get knocked to the ground by a defensive end. With you know, in either snow or rain, or we didn't do it for Manning a lot because he played in the dome. But a lot of times, you know, Foxborough had horrible.
Which Brady mentioned yesterday.
He did throw that line in there.
Yep, and, on the right.
Yeah. Also, we'll get into some other lines because I want to get into those prop bets that we had earlier in the week and see which ones hit and which ones didn't. But. But I just thought it was really cool to see, you know, those guys and how they adapted to the conditions, you know, kind of like Tiger and Phil always would, or any professional golfer would in those conditions. And was it 16, the par 3, where yeah. Tiger was by far the first – it was raining pretty hard, and Tiger was by far the furthest one outside of all four players, and he was like 20 feet.
Yeah, it was 183-yard hole. Peyton hit it to – what Peyton hit it to? Probably no. Peyton hit it to a foot.
They gave it to him. Tiger didn't even have to.
Okay, yeah. Peyton hit it to a foot,
and Brady.
Brady hit it to about 6 feet, yeah. Which Phil made, yeah. And Phil hit it to about 8 feet.
Yeah, so even if Brady would hit a bad shot,
Phil was still in there. Close.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but
Phil
you obviously
made the putt for the half.
You want the professional golfer hitting the putt as opposed to the other. And you heard that a lot in the commentary yesterday. Was that how, you know, you wanted the. You wanted the pro to be able to hit the second shot in, so it was really important for the amateur to hit a tee shot. And you noticed that whenever Tiger and Peyton, they were up, three up through seven or eight or whatever. I mean, pretty early. And I think it's maybe even through eight or six, I mean. But nevertheless, so you get on the back nine when it gets to be the modified alternate shot. And, you know, that's when Tom stepped his game up. And so then they were able to let Phil, you know, hit some second shots in. And then, but Peyton, you know, he wasn't able to find a fairway. So then, you know, Tiger's having hit all these iron shots in, but I mean we'll go into a little bit here later how good a form Tiger was on, yep. You know, but I thought it was interesting how kind of the first of all Peyton's iron game was really good too, which allowed them.
Yeah, Peyton's a really good iron player, not very good off the tee. A really good iron player.
He had some really good shots in there. You know, he wasn't putting it in play for Tiger on the back nine, but allowed. So then that made them pick Tiger's tee shot. So then Peyton was able to hit the second shots in. you know, in a format like that, but going in, we would have thought, oh, you know, if Phil's hitting the second shot's in a lot more than, you know, Phil versus Peyton, you know, is going to be a fairly decent discrepancy there. And it turned out that Peyton was able to definitely hold his own, if not even do a little bit more, you know, on some of those iron shots, which I thought was important. He did miss that. I can't remember exactly what hole it was, but he hit the really bad approach shot in, and then Tiger hit him up to about 3 feet on the
chip
shot.
15.
Somewhere around there, maybe a little bit earlier. But yeah, in the same ballpark, you're right. And so he missed a really short putt there. It was one of those we were talking. He got up there and tried to hit it really fast.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like he does everything.
He didn't want to overthink it.
No, he didn't. And I think he did that for almost all of his shots. So I don't think he really was out of his routine. I think it was, you know, kind of like all, you know, most all sports are kind of more reactive than golf is, you know, where it's, you know, fast paced. You know, you're, you know, how long do you have? Like 2 seconds as a quarterback, if even that, to get a ball out, you know, with all the defense ends running at you. So, you know, you got to be able to think on your feet. And I think that he's trying to translate that in his game, where it's like, you know, I'm not going to stand in the pocket for 8 seconds and think about throwing who I'm going to throw it to, you know?
You know what I thought was weird? Peyton was a pretty good putter, right? I mean, he was a decent putter.
He had some good speed. He made the on the front nine, made the long birdie putt. On the birdie putt.
And he's a 4 handicap, so he's a pretty good player. He was having Tiger give him percentages on every putt he hit all day as far as how hard to hit it.
I thought that was interesting, too. Yeah, it was like it was how hard. And the funniest one was the one that we were watching when the hole had already been – like the hole had already been seeded. You know, I think
it was when Tom holed out, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Because Tiger was already in for birdie, too.
Yeah, I believe that was it, yeah. And so he sat there for like 30 seconds and was asking Tiger, you know what percentage. And early in –
trying to get a read.
Yeah, he was like 100 and – like or before we figured out what they were talking about, you know, it was like you'd hear Tiger say 110 or 115, and then you heard a 90, and you're like, what the hell is he talking about? And then taking a percent, you know, so 100% would be if it's a flat putt, 90% if it's a little downhill, 110, 115 if it's a little uphill. And it was just weird, like you said, how good, you know, he has a good handicap, and yet he's still having to ask Tiger for, you know, kind of this, you know, thought process, I guess, or, you know, maybe it was just maybe just a reinsurance thing, you know, in his head, you know, maybe thinking about, you know, having hearing the play in his, you know, in the headset or whatever, you know, and then going from there on how to do it.
Yeah, but maybe.
I don't know, but it was a weird thought process. But like you said, yeah, I mean, Peyton missed a couple of short putts in there, but he also, you know, a couple of the longer putts, even the ones he didn't make, he lagged up there pretty close, so he had good speed. Yeah. I definitely think Peyton held his own for most of the day yesterday.
Yeah, he did. He did. He was a good player. Not very good off the tee, like we said, but really good everywhere else. Tom Brady on the back nine hit a lot of good tee shots, which is what helped him and Phil get back in the match, because like you said, Phil was able to hit a lot of those approaches. Because last thing you want, I mean, there was a hole where Phil was, I mean, he had to have been a good, 80 yards in front of Tom Brady, and they took Brady's tee shot anyway because they didn't want Phil to have to hit the approach shot. Also on the back nine, there was a little eagle action from Phil and Tom Brady. Let me see if I can get this to the right point where we can get Phil talking about hitting bombs in his cart whenever he hit that tee shot on 11.
Yeah, credit to Brady for freeing him up as well.
Hit a good one.
Yes, you
need
did.
A little luck. Nice shot. I think it's good, but I don't. You know, I haven't played here enough to know. Come on, baby.
Excuses.
Give us a look at it.
Phil, I don't want to give away how good this is, but I want to just see what your reaction here is when you pull up to the green.
Oh, yes, sir. That's what I'm talking about.
Hitting bombs.
There it Perfect. Is. Hitting Perfect. Bombs.
I love it. And you knew it was coming at some point whenever Phil would hit some good shot. We knew that line was going to be thrown in.
And
at
that
some
shot
point.
Qualified.
It did. It was, well, it landed just a few feet from the hole.
Oh, yeah. Divot was like 3 feet from the hole.
And I mean,
ended up on the back fringe. And Brady made it. From 35 feet on the fringe.
Yeah, just canned it. I can't. Can you remember? I can't remember off the top of my head where Brady, like, Tiger would have had, what, like a 10-footer or 12-footer for birdie?
Somewhere I mean, in the 10 to 15-foot range for birdie.
So it definitely wasn't like he could have automatically two-putted for the win. You know,
Tiger definitely would have made, and they would have halved.
With how he was playing yesterday, you might be right on that.
Home track.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you heard that from Phil a lot during the match yesterday. You know, I hadn't played here very much. You know, he's trying to, you know, coming up with these little things. But, you know, to look back on it, you know, with how good Tiger played and Phil was a little bit off there for a little bit, and with how good Peyton played, for it to have gone to 18, you know, is pretty, it's kind of surprising, you know, when you look at the actual form that everyone had, you know, during yesterday's play. And that's kind of how match play goes sometimes, especially when you get in that modified alternate shot format. And I don't know if we have, I don't know if we got the audio clip of this one, but one of the funniest parts was after he made, after Tom made that putt, they're coming off and Phil's talking about, I don't know how we're going to, something along the lines of, I don't know how these guys are going to be able to stop us. We just got all this momentum that we just built up.
Well, and Phil said it's a really good thing we got three down, because with all this momentum, we might close them out way too early.
That's what he said. That's what he said right there. I thought that was a good line. So the trash talking got, I'm going to, and we could talk about this a little bit more, because you've been in broadcasting, so you probably know a little bit more than I do. You didn't think this was the issue yesterday, but it seemed like they cut out the audio a lot of times right after when people were hitting shots. So I thought that, for me, as a viewer, I thought that was them cutting out them cussing.
So I looked into it last night on Twitter. I just tried to see what people were saying about it and see, you know, were all those cuts in the audio for F-bombs, or were the, or was it technical difficulties because of the rain? Had there been no rain, I would have just assumed that it was cussing. But because of the rain, I thought, you know, maybe technical difficulties. I'm not sure. But after looking on social media last night, I think it was because of the amount of F-bombs that were being dropped. And that makes me, look, I understand. It's middle of the day on a Sunday. You got kids watching. You can't just have F-bombs flying everywhere. But what they should have done is had like an online stream that was an uncensored version.
That's what I said. Pay $5 or whatever. Pay
right, pay-per-view.
Yeah, pay-per-view. I would have paid $10 to watch an unfiltered version.
Yeah. Of that. Make it 20. We watched it together. We would each pitched in 10.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, and that can kind of go into what may be some options down the road in the future, but
they should release it on YouTube. They should release the uncensored on YouTube and watch it back.
Right.
I would watch it back, well, I promise.
Well, YouTube's just as strict on no cussing as freaking a television network is with all the ads that they get. But you're exactly right. If we could watch an unedited version, especially with, I guarantee you, after some of those really bad shots, or even after Brady holed it, the really, really good shots, I bet there was some, what people would consider, vulgar language out there.
Oh, yeah, there were definitely. I watched Tom Brady mouth the F-bomb after one of his shots, mm-hmm. which, you know, it was on the front nine, maybe third or fourth hole when he was out in the trees. I think it was whenever he hit it in the trees, and Tiger said, that'll be in the fairway. Over on 7.
that was a good line of trust. And, you know, I mean, obviously, I think it probably was a little bit of both. I guarantee you there were some times where the rain messed the audio up, too. You know, so it's not like every single time the audio cut out, someone said a cuss word. I don't think that. But I think that there was a higher percentage of times it cut out because of someone using what people would consider a vulgar term. And like you said, you know, if we could have, you know, that's the reason it didn't get an A+, or the trash talk didn't get an A+ for me, is because I don't think we got to hear all of it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You know, so if we could, you know, eventually down the road, not only would it excite the fans and give us something to look for, but if all that money goes to COVID relief, you know how many more people would have donated. You know, I mean, they raised how much? 20 million. I mean, that's nothing to gripe about or any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
That's hopefully going to help millions of lives, like it should. But I mean, that's just a small idea that could have raised a lot more money right there, you know. And obviously, there's logistics and everything that goes into it. But you know, like we were talking about earlier, from the expectation side of it. You know, because that's the thing about, especially with no sports going on right now, so, and how much we love golf anyway. So
right.
We haven't been able to watch basketball or anything. Now, with even love golf, golf's coming back. So we're, you know, we have all these expectations. We want it to be so great. And like I said, I would give it an A, almost as close to an A+ as you could get, really, for the way everything came out, with Brady holing it, from, you know, a little bit of Phil's trash talk, the U.S. Open medal Tiger comment, which I thought was one of my favorites.
You want it?
Yeah, let's play.
So this was at the One Club Challenge hole.
One Club Challenge hole. Yeah, we'll set up the context of it. So Phil is, what would you say, 90-100 yards away, if not further?
Yeah, I'd say probably 120, maybe, 120, by looking at it. 120. Yeah. With a 6-iron in his hands.
Pin's in the back, and Tiger is...
He's in the waist area.
He's in the waist.
Phil is wet.
And Tiger had already hit his second shot. Phil's actually hitting his third shot at this point, because he hit it over. So Tiger's on the very front of the green, and the pin's in the back.
He's maybe 50 feet from the hole.
He's 50 feet from the hole. Yeah, and so Phil asked Tiger to go up and mark the ball, because it's in his way.
Because
it's in his way. Yeah, and so you have the clip.
Yeah. So the part that we don't get here, maybe we do get it. Tiger tells him that if he hits the ball, he'll give him the hole, and then Phil goes ahead and hits. So here's the exchange though about the U.S. Open medals.
I've seen Phil do some odd things before, but having T-Dub mark that ball has got
to
be up there.
You want me to use one of my U.S. Open medals?
Do you have one?
Huh?
Do you have any? I got some silver ones. Do you have any of the gold ones?
Either one will work. I should have three on my team tomorrow. Let me have it over.
Yeah, so there's Tiger and Phil's exchange about the U.S. Open medals. And then he tells me if he hits the ball, he'll give him the hole. He missed it by like 3 inches on the fly.
It almost hit it. It was so close. Not only did it almost hit it on a hop, but it almost hit it like on the way up from the hop. That's how close it was. It almost nicked the top of the ball, which would have been crazy. And, you know, I think we have to – you're more English profound than I do. Phil's had what, 5 or 6 runner-ups in the U.S. Open. Does some the correct term here for silver medals? Some silver medals. Should he say I have an abundance of silver medals?
Well, maybe he was trying to do the whole Tom Herman. How many silver medals do you have at the U.S. Open, Phil? Some. I don't even do it. I don't want to sit here for 30 seconds like Tom Herman and waste our time. But, yeah. you get the point.
Yes, we did. Yes, yeah, we definitely got the point. So, and I thought that was a great bit. I thought whenever they did the interview a few weeks ago with Ernie, I had made the joke to you and some other friends. I wish Tiger had made the U.S. Open comment when they were talking, when Phil had that picture of Tiger putting the green jacket on him. You know, I thought like Tiger should have came back with the U.S. Open. But instead, he had the green jacket 3 feet away from him that he is still holding to this day. So he just threw it on him like a blanket, which is still great trash talk. So
I said he should have just done the whole interview with a framed picture of the Wingfoot logo behind it.
If Tiger hadn't missed the cut at Wingfoot last time it was there, it was the first tournament that Earl had passed away too. So we'll give him a little bit of a pass there. Yep, so, but I would have definitely held up something U.S. Open related, maybe not Wingfoot related, but definitely U.S. Open related. Now, if Tiger wins the U.S. Open in October, is that right, or September when that?
Oh, September, because the week before the Ryder Cup, so it'll be like the third weekend of September. I think
that's you're exactly right. So if Tiger wins the U.S. Open, you know, in this year. Which, if he drives it like he did yesterday, he has a hell of a chance to do.
Yeah, Tiger is very much on form. Let's do this. So Tiger's very much on form. But first, I want to let everybody know we got weather coming this week in the state of Oklahoma. It's going to rain today and tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday and maybe Friday and maybe Saturday. So what you need to do, you need to have McRae Roofing on speed dial. Their commitment to craft is what defines McRae Roofing and Exteriors. McRae Roofing is a locally owned and operated roofing service company that is passionate about the quality of their roof creations. Jeff McRae, friend of the show here on the 73rd hole, is the owner of McRae Roofing, and he views your roof like a canvas. His team's sole purpose is to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. If it's good enough for Gallardia, it's good enough for Oak Tree, it's good enough for you. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. And while you're getting a new roof put on your house, you can head on over to Bushwood. Get you a quick 18 in. They had a good Memorial Day tournament this weekend. All that rain will be welcome at Bushwood this week as that course is getting itself prepared for the big July 4th tournament, the Ouachita Valley, the oldest tournament in the state of Oklahoma. I cannot wait. I love that tournament. It's a 3-day. It's individual stroke play. It's, I think, championship flight gets no mulligans. Every other flight gets one mulligans, and it is a freaking blast. I love playing in it, and I'm glad I get to this year. Originally, I was going to be out of town, and now I'm not going to be out of town due to COVID. My wife and I decided not to go to Mexico over July 4th weekend, so I will be in town, and I will be playing in the Ouachita Valley. You should, too. Bushwood Golf and Country Club down in Chickasha. Come join Taylor and I in the oldest, grandest tournament in the state of Oklahoma. So, Taylor, we were talking about Tiger's form, which I'll say this. I'm not going to say that he wins every tournament he tees it up in the rest of the year, but I'm not going to say he won't.
We cannot eliminate that from the equation. I mean,
it's very much in play.
And they had mentioned before, or, you know, in the interview and everything about how Tiger even made the joke, you know, medalist has wide fairways, even Phil can even hit him, you know. So, yes. So
which was not true on the front nine.
Not true one bit. But, you know, just to put it into context, you know, even though the fairways are more generous, he didn't miss a fairway yesterday, did he?
No, he did not miss a fairway. And not only did he not miss a fairway, the pro tracer on every single one of his tee shots was just like these missiles, just hitting missiles. Well, same trajectory off every box, same ball flight. I mean, the ball flight was exactly what he wanted it to be. I don't know if he actually saw a single one of his tee shots get to its apex all day because he was already in the ground picking up his tee.
Well, you mentioned a good point there that he was hitting, you know, he was kind of hitting those missiles out there and you know, even with the rain. So, you know, you got wide fairways and a little bit of moisture. So, I mean, you kind of have to hit some bad shots to miss the fairways. But like we saw, Phil miss fairways, and obviously the amateurs had a tough time hitting them. So it's not like it's, you know, a dead giveaway. But you hit the nail on the head there with – with the fact that, you know, it's just, it was just stripe show. I mean, he was just, like you said, he was just hitting it. There wasn't, can't even remember hardly any tee shots where he was like looking at it to see if it was going to get a good bounce. So there was one hole, it might have been the par five, I think. It was the same hole that Brady holed out on, where Tiger was maybe 2 feet from the little bunker.
Oh, seven, yeah.
Yeah, seven, yeah. But other than that, I mean, he was not just in the fairway, but in the middle of the fairway.
Yes.
You know, and I noticed a lot more players doing it, like Schauffele was doing it earlier this year too, where, you know, like we see players like Rory, you know, who are just hitting these high drives, high touring drives. But it seems like over the last maybe few months, or even just maybe the last year per se, it seems like even these guys are hitting it far, you know, they're kind of hitting that more penetrating flight like Tiger was yesterday. I would love to see some of the apex heights that he had, you know, because yes. They definitely weren't like Rory's tee shots, you know, where they're just high drop.
High bunk.
Yeah, high bunk. Like we saw last week in the yes. driving relief, you know, yes. I mean, neither are just high, and even DJs and Wolfs are high. You know, it seemed like when we saw the pro tracers, you know, like Tiger would have the same ball, like same trajectory as like Ricky, you know, but Tiger's hitting it a lot further than Ricky is, yes. you know. So I thought that was very interesting to see that he was doing, and like I said, I had noticed some other players were doing that too, which I find very fascinating. But I mean, he didn't look like he was in any type of discomfort at all with his swing. He hit maybe a couple of iron shots that he wasn't quite satisfied with, but other than that, I mean, his driver was on point. And I mean, if he can be able to translate that confidence into the other courses that he plays, I think that's always been an issue for Tiger. Maybe not an issue, not always, because obviously we have the year 2000 in there, which we'll get into a little bit later with the Tiger Slam documentary that was on. But I just, for him to be able to drive it like that, with him being historically the best iron player to ever grab a club, if he could just hit it just 75% of his driver as good as he did yesterday going out there, he's going to contend in almost every tournament he plays, unless he's just putting absolutely terrible.
Also, I have a world-class idea. So there are still some concerns about whether the PGA Championship can be held at Harding Park in San Francisco due to the regulations in California. Let's hold it at Medalist.
I guarantee you Tiger would petition for it.
Let's hold it at Medalist and let Tiger just hit missiles down the fairway on every single hole, 14 fairways every day, and just win the tournament by 10 shots.
Well, let's see. He won the Masters by 12. He won the U.S. Open by 15. He won the British Open by 8. All of his other PGA wins, I don't think, have been more than by...
How much did he win by Southern?
3 or 4, if that. And then earlier in Medina, he won by just a few. But needless to say, he hasn't won by near the extent in the other majors as the PGA. So I think by putting at the medals of the PGA, he can get him an 8-to-plus more win victory. So I really love your idea, Colby. I think we should get a petition started.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Yeah, the driver swing looked great. The irons, I mean, looked like he was pretty much puring them all day. The only full swing I can think of that Tiger really didn't hit the shot that he wanted to was it was his alternate shot. It was on the back nine. It was one of the earlier par fives where they took maybe the I don't even remember, maybe the 10th, 12th hole, something like that. They took Peyton's drive and Tiger tried to hit a little cut five.
The one where he hit it in the bunker, yes. And then Manning hit it over. Yeah, I know, yes. Exactly what
that was. The only full swing that Tiger made all day that I thought to myself, okay, he didn't have that one on a string.
Well, and we had mentioned this hole earlier, the 16th hole, that par three where he pulled a little bit. He seemed little disgruntled, but in all reality, that would have been a fairly good shot. It was just the fact that, you know, there was that many people out there. And then I think on the front nine, because one of the better shots that he hit from yesterday was that his greenside bunker shot on nine. You know?
Oh, yeah.
But also, he was a long ways out in the fairway, and he was only like 2 yards right of being really good. You know, it kicked right into the bunker. So I don't think that was necessarily that bad of a swing. And even his looser swings, as you just saw, were only a few yards offline. You know, and so I think that, like I said, that bunker shot was really good. So obviously his short game touch was around there. We didn't get to see a whole lot of his chipping. You know, he chipped on that hole, and then he chipped on what hole was that? The one that
Peyton missed the short putt on. Yeah, 14 maybe. Yeah.
And he hit. Yeah. I mean, that was a tough shot he had too.
Oh, it was over a bunker.
Over a bunker, yeah. With the rain. The rain started
raining
coming
hard at that time.
Chipped it up to 3 feet. Hard to do much better than that.
Yeah,
you know,
can't so, beat
I mean,
the bunker from, shot on nine, like you said. I mean, that was, he had 20 or 25 yards of bunker to carry, and then he was short sighted. He just put a little 60-degree under it, saucy spin up to about 6 inches. Tap in.
I mean, then and. I can't think of any putts that Tiger, you know, should have made and didn't make. Or can you think of any off the top of your head?
I'm trying to look back.
I can't.
I'll tell you what, after Tom Brady dunked it for a birdie,
I thought
and
he
then
made
Tiger
that.
Standing over, I thought it was probably in the 35-foot range. And it was a horseshoe lip out for eagle, which would have gone in on top of Tom Brady's hole out for birdie, which would have put Tiger and Peyton maybe three or four up at the time. I'm not sure how many they were up through six. And horseshoe lip out, that was a great putt. But no, most of the day I thought Tiger hit pretty good putts.
Yeah, he did. It didn't seem like he missed a whole lot.
The putt on one was good.
Putt on one,
yeah. Little five-footer for the half.
That was true. Yeah, well, that's another kind of – but obviously the first hole, I think, is kind of always an outlier because Phil hit an iron 50 yards left or whatever, you know. So in that little wedge shot Tiger hit in there, he hit it to 35 feet, so that wasn't necessarily good. But this also goes to show, you know, everyone out there listening how we're nitpicking Tiger's, you know, poor shots and they're still on the green or 20 feet from the hole, you know. And then – because everything else was just solid. And, yeah. I mean – oh, go ahead.
Underrated part of the day? Was when Tom Brady did one of our all-time favorites here on the 73rd hole.
Oh, my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
It was so good.
Dude, we laughed so hard when that happened. Can you remember what hole it was? I can't remember.
I can't. It was. I don't even know if it was front or back. No, I think it was front, and he just came over the top, maybe five or six,
yeah,
and just hooked it right into the pond.
It was. I can't remember the hole number, but he was like asking the guys in the microphones, like, "Can y'all hear me? Can anyone hear me?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Where do I drop this? Where do I drop this? What do I do?" And so I thought it was kind of funny, and you saw Peyton made the comment too about how Tiger had explained all the unplayable rules to him, so he knew what to do when he was down there. So he wanted to start avoiding those. So I thought it was funny how, you know, like, we as casual football fans, you know, we don't know every single explicit rule, but we know the rules fairly well, you know, from watching. You know, we know what a penalty is, you know, the yardage and all that stuff, you know. So I think it's funny when you see those guys who are experts at their craft go out there and not know, you know, how to drop the ball.
Yeah, Tom's,
you know,
like, where do I drop here?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that could also go back to how we talked about many times about how the rules are so complex. But I find that funny how people, you know, obviously for their sport, you know, obviously some Brady and Belichick, they're always known for kind of tinkering with the rules. You know, you as a sports fan, remember, what was that playoff game where they had, like, Shane Vereen listed as an old lineman or something in the backfield, yeah, and the old lineman is an eligible receiver.
Yeah. Got
and,
somebody wide open. It was like Dan Connolly or
exactly.
something wide open.
And they literally
zone.
Changed the rule in the offseason and next year because, yes, you know, so that goes to show, you know, how much in tune they are with the rules in their sport.
Right.
And then for them to come into ours and to not
and
even know where to drop
it. Tom being like, now if I drop this on the grass and it rolls onto the sand, can I put it back on the grass?
And what's funny about that too,
Tom, you can't. No.
You know that these are not this guy's first ever type of competitive golf that they've played.
No.
You know,
they're a 4 and an 8, which Tom Brady, an 8.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom.
Like we were saying yesterday, he has to be studying the Bucs playbook 24/7 if he's an 8. You know, that's
reverse
the only,
sandbagger.
Exactly.
He dude doesn't carry a driver.
You know what was weird? I was looking up the equipment that everyone was using, and it said that he had a Maverick driver in the bag. But
he must have taken it out after 18 yesterday morning.
What do you think about that, Colby? The fact that he came out and said that he had played 18 the morning, and then he's out on the range. You know, from my perspective, that's someone searching for it. Like, what the hell am I going to do?
You know? That's someone who I think that he clearly is not a great golfer. And he thought to himself, okay, if I just work really hard and put in a lot of swings before this match, I can make myself a great golfer.
Well, I mean,
he did have a hole out, and he had some good tee shots on the back nine. But, yeah. I mean, the dude played really bad, I'd say 60% of the holes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Playing 18 the morning that you've got the match, I mean, get out there an hour and a half before your tee time if you want to make a couple extra swings. Get your swings in. Get ready to go.
I mean, to put in perspective, you know, for any of those football players, you know, I mean, obviously they're out there before, you know, warming up, stretching and all that. But, you know, what would Brady throw sometimes 50 times a game, if not more? Is he going out there, like, dropping back and throwing, like, slants to his receivers 50 times before each game? You know, I mean, obviously he's doing that during the week.
Right.
But all players are doing that during the week, you know, where they're practicing, doing all that. But you're not doing it the morning and day of the competition. You know, you're supposed to have had everything figured out by then and then have your routine set in place.
Also, I mean, these guys aren't 25. You want your body right.
Exactly, yeah. So, maybe Brady is thinking so much about the Buccaneers that he's trying to, you know, do more repetition. That way, you know, whenever he gets sacked a few times, he doesn't, you know, bruise up and die from it. At, what is he, 43 now?
42, 43 when the season starts. Somewhere in that neighborhood.
He's a good-looking 42, 43.
Yeah, he's doing well. Yeah. He's doing really well for himself. Speaking of the Bucs, a lot of bucks were raised for charity, not only yesterday, but the past Sunday, too, at Seminole. What do you think of the comparison, not between necessarily the charitable aspects, but the actual setups themselves and the courses as well, Medalist versus Seminole, because it was really cool on back-to-back Sundays to see two of the most famous courses, certainly in the state of Florida and in the United States, on back-to-back weeks, front and center. For the nation to see.
Right, exactly. And we were talking about this yesterday, Kobe. I did a little bit of research to look it up, you know, because we were like, I wonder what it takes to be a member at Medalist, you know. And because,
yeah,
you know,
we're talking about the membership. Really,
so I had looked up, some of the data I'd found was a little outdated, so it may have changed. But from an article I read, this, the information was dated back to 2013, so that's six, seven years ago now. And so at the time, it said that the initiation fee was 100 and I believe 120,000 initiation.
Pocket
and,
change for these guys.
Well, and it said on there, it's normally weighed for tour players.
Generous.
And it said at the time, in 2013, there were 22 tour members there, LPGA and PGA combined. So there was 22 total, you know, Tiger, Ricky, JT, Brooks, DJ, you know, a lot of those other guys.
I bet they get some good mixed best ball games going with the men and the women.
That would be awesome. That's a good point. I didn't see any of the particular LPGA players that were out there, but I would be curious to see, you know, if who the best two or three LPGA player members are out there. But as for, you know, and going back to that, they said that the annual fee is $18,000. So divided that, so 18, that's was at like about
$1,500 a month.
About $1,500 a month. Bad. That's not bad. But they said that there's 270 members and there's a pretty extensive waiting list to get in.
Yeah, I would.
So that's kind of the hiccup you see at a lot of, you know, because they're like, you know, you hear that money, and obviously to a lot of people, majority of people, that sounds like a lot. But we know people that could afford that, but it's not like they can just move down to Florida and join Medalist. You know, right. I mean, you could probably slide a couple, you know, $1 million check under there and get moved up on the waiting list. You know what I'm saying? But you know, without a little bit of extra funds, you know, you're going to be waiting a while to get in at that club.
You know what we need to do? We need to go ahead and get our name on the waiting list so that if we ever hit the Powerball, we're already, you know, closer to the top. Because the last thing I want to do is hit the Powerball and then have to wait 3 years to get on at Medalist. You know what I mean?
Boy, yeah, that would be the biggest first world problem in the world.
Yeah, right, I might send them an email this afternoon. They're probably closed today, but they can get back to me tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's no big deal.
That's right. Yeah, Memorial Day and the day after.
With the rain, yeah, you know, the weather coming through today.
Yeah, there's no one there. Just wait the next couple of days and get everything typed up the way you want to. And, you know, you're a pretty convincing talker, so, I mean, I think you can get them into it.
Yeah, I can weasel my way on the Medalist. No doubt about it. No. Maybe even for, like, a member guest or something like this. You know, if we can get in with one of these guys. I mean, the membership is, it's JT, Patrick Cantlay, Brooks Koepka, obviously Tiger. I don't know if is Ricky a member there? I know he's the course record holder, 62.
Think he has, they did show that. We made some jokes about that.
They actually didn't show any highlights of him winning the Players, which was good restraint on
that
part.
That is good. Well, it's probably because TNT was covering it and not NBC.
That's true.
Because they showed it. Yeah. Obviously, he was playing last week, but how many times did we see it?
NBC would have led with it in the intro.
Exactly. Yeah, that's definitely a deep rabbit hole there. So, but going back to kind of the course setup and everything, if I was going to rate the courses just on how I liked them, I would give Seminole a 9 and a Medalist probably an 8, I would say, somewhere around there.
I think I'd flip them.
Really?
I think I'd give Medalist a 9 and Seminole an 8.
What would you like more about the Medalist and Seminole?
I liked, so Medalist to me, the holes were more defined. I liked Seminole, but Seminole to me, I couldn't tell what was which hole, what was going which direction. It's a square piece of property, and it's all kind of cutting in and amongst each other. I liked the green complexes at Seminole better. I thought that the Medalist was just a more aesthetically pleasing golf course. I don't know. For me, I like being on a golf course where I cannot see everything that's happening on the entire course anywhere that I'm standing. It's the reason I love playing Carson Creek so much. I go to Carson Creek and I feel like I'm on my own planet on every single hole. You're just in this own serene universe by yourself. And Medalist had more of that kind of feel to it, whereas Seminole was incredible. It was beautiful, but it was, you know, whenever you're out there, if you're on 17, you're going to be able to see the guys on 2. If you're on 6, you're going to be able to see the guys on 12. It's just, it's a very open piece of property, and I like the tree-lined look better. So that's just a personal preference. It's by no means dogging on Seminole. Like I said, I'd probably go 9 Medalist, 8 Seminole.
I understand that. I definitely do. The main reason that I found Seminole so amazing was the fact that, you know, you can just tell even better from the aerial views, but you can tell just by watching it how excuse me, you know how that's what, this is really how what great architects do. You know, they fit the course to the land. They don't build the course, you know,
definitely.
They, you know, they don't revert, you know, vice versa. You know, that's one of the great things that, that Perry Maxwell's done. One of my famous, all the great courses around here are designed by him. You know, make an example, you know, we both played Dornick Hills down in Ardmore. You know, I mean, there's the cliff hole, you know, where you, I mean, literally there's a huge cliff. There's a green on top.
16-17.
Yeah, your tee shot, you hit down off the cliff. So he's, you know, he didn't. You don't build that cliff there. Right. You know, you don't bring in the machines and say, let's put a cliff here. You know, so you put, you build everything around that. And I could tell that so much with Seminole, you know, right? Because 16, 17, and 18 are right there by the ocean. And you can tell just how the natural sand dunes and everything just flow with the lay of the land. And I really love the back nine. The par threes on the back nine were really good. I love the back-to-back par five perspective. 18's a really good hole going back. We talked, I think 16 was my favorite hole out of the whole, out of the whole course. And so obviously I think the while I'll get Seminole's back nine, I believe is a lot better than the front nine. I just, like I said, I love Seminole. One of the things about Medalists that, you know, just play devil's advocate, it just, you know, because like I said, they made the Tiger tees, so it's 7,700 yards or whatever it is now.
It's almost 76 from the Tiger tees.
And so it's...
They weren't playing it from that yesterday.
No, they weren't. No,
they were playing it from a shade under 73.
Yeah, exactly right. And from the rain and everything, that was probably smart. And it just seemed like to me it was... You could tell it was a modern, a more modern course, you know, kind of like they've all mentioned, you know, it's got the wider fairways. You can tell by the, by where the bunkers are placed that it's a Pete Dye design, Pete Dye slash Craig Norman design. And like I said, obviously, Mel's is a great course. It's great. It's gorgeous. I mean, beautiful, you know, the grass texture, everything on that was great. I just, from a design perspective, Seminole is just a crowning gem of the golfing world, not even the country. And so I'd always heard that, but I'd never seen it. And to see that validated it for me in my mind. And I might even give Seminole, you know, even higher than a nine, just, but also too, it would have been interesting to see how, if we would have flip-flopped them, you know, like let's say that we had, you know, the not even just the golfers, but, you know, the telecast was different. You know, if we had,
if the better product was at Seminole,
correct.
It would, yeah, that's true.
You know, so maybe that
could very well be influencing the way I look at it.
That could have had a little bit to do with, and I just would have liked to have seen how, you know, not just us, but everyone's thoughts on the course would have changed depending on how the telecast was presented. But, you know, that's just all my perspective. I'm very traditionalist when it comes to this game. But, you know, this is really, you know, like, you know, are you, it's the opposite of pick your poison here because, right. You know, it's, you know, both of them are exquisite. And, but when it comes down to, you know, we were talking about the courses, but going back to the broadcasting product, you know, we mentioned earlier how the TNT was better. There was more humor. They allowed the players to talk, which was,
they did not talk over the players.
That was
at all.
Was that not the biggest complaint out of last week?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they just trying to talk over them and it's like, no one cares what you had to say. We want to hear these guys.
Yeah,
you know?
We get commentary every week. We've got the players mic'd up one time a year for these special events. Let us hear the players.
Yeah, we got these huge mic. The mic even fell off of Brady's shorter.
Split his pants
when he hold it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you saw it. I mean, it's dangling. I mean, so we're loading up all these equipment. So why the hell you want to talk over them?
Yeah,
you know? So,
exactly.
So, I mean, there was. So if we're going to grade the telecasts, you know, so obviously I gave Seminole a 9, I gave Medalist an 8. You flip-flopped them, 9 and 8. If we're going to grade the telecasts, I'm going to give, I'd probably give TNT an A probably. It could have been A+. We just could have got maybe a vulgar version. The other one, probably a C, if not
even. I was fixing to say.
If not worse.
I think I would give the TaylorMade Driving Relief telecast a D. I mean, I thought it was a very poor telecast, and I thought that was even further accentuated yesterday when we saw what it looks like when it's done right.
I think an A and a D.
Yeah.
Probably so. Yeah, you don't want to be – it seems like it's being harsh, but, I mean, the telecast just wasn't good. And, I mean
– No, it was boring. It was lame.
And even, you know, looking back on it, I mean, that was – No, that was good golf that was played. You know, I mean, coming down this, you know, you had Rory. And
yeah, I mean, you had two of the top players in the world, and then you had Ricky and Wolf. And, yeah. I mean, Ricky played great. Wolf hit some bombs.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like the golf disappointed, you know. So, I mean, I think the telecast brought that one down a lot. And, you know, obviously, anytime you're doing it the second, you know, or the week after, you can learn a little bit like we had talked about, and hopefully they did. But yeah, I'm probably agreeing with you. And just maybe because I'm feeling genuine this morning, I'll give them a C-,
yeah.
you know, instead of a D, you know, because at least least that C's get degrees, you know, so at least they can pass the class.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. That's Taylor Williams. I'm Colby Powell. This is the 73rd hole. Hope everyone is having a great Memorial Day, and thanks once again to all of those who made the sacrifice for us so that we can live our lives the way we do. Part of what we do is play golf. We love it. We enjoy it, and you should head down to Chickasha. Head down to Bushwood. Have a good time. It's under new ownership. The greens are in phenomenal shape. Newly sodded tee boxes. Fairways coming in nicely after the rain this week. I can't wait to see what it looks like the next time we go down and play. It seems like every time Taylor and I go down and play, it gets better and better. So looking forward to that. We're going to take a break, come back on the other side, wrap this thing up, talking about last night's documentary on the Golf Channel, Tiger Slam. That's all coming up next here as we finish things up on a Memorial Day version of the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back into the 73rd hole. Colby Powell, Taylor Williams with you. Glad everyone's with us on this Memorial Day Monday. Head over to social media. Follow us, 73rd hole. So search 73rd hole on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You will find us. We would greatly appreciate a follow and a like on all those different pages, as well as you taking the time to rate and subscribe this podcast wherever you are listening. We would certainly, certainly appreciate it. So it was a great day yesterday. We had the match, which was phenomenal, and Golf Channel, they were smart. They delayed the start of Tiger Slam until the match ended, which obviously you figured that they would do that, but you never know, and they did, which was smart. So the Tiger Slam documentary comes on, and we were kind of talking about this last night, Taylor, you and I, because we watched it together, and then we were talking about it afterward, and I've maybe changed my tune a little bit after I slept on it. I laid in bed awake for like 3 hours this morning, and I was just, you know, sometimes you just can't sleep. And I was laying there, I was thinking about
it. It wasn't because of the documentary bothering you. It was just from natural reasons. Or was it part of it?
It was part of it.
Here we go. Let's hear it.
So, I mean, here was my main gripe. Okay, first off, it was an hour instead of two. I thought it was going to be two. It was only one. My main concern is, and maybe The Last Dance has tainted my opinion now, because The Last Dance was such a deep dive with so much behind-the-scenes footage. I thought that we were going to get, like, just a shorter version of that. I thought we were getting a deep dive into Tiger's four majors that comprise the Tiger Slam. And what I thought we got was a surface level look at a lot of things and a lot of stories we'd already heard. I thought it was basically just a little bit extended version of the Chasing History deal that Golf Channel did last year, which talked about all these majors for about 7-8 minutes. I mean, they showed all the same highlights that they showed in last night's deal. They just talked about each major for about 13-14 minutes before they went to commercial. So the most disappointing thing to me was that I thought we were getting a deep inside look, and we got the same surface conversation about the Tiger Slam we've gotten for 20 years.
Yeah, you exactly nailed it. And I've got a lot of complaints about the documentary. I mean, obviously, I'll mention the good and the bad. I think that...
Yeah, there was some good.
There was some good. I think that it did... For it only being an hour, it's hard to comprise something as monumental and, you know, game-changing as winning four majors in a row in an hour presentation when you're talking about all of them. Because, you know, you could kind of tell they tried to jump around, you know, because they went back to – they kind of hinted when Tiger changed his swing after the 97 Masters. You know, they talked about Stevie for a little bit, how he got his –
Yeah, they spent a whole 2 minutes on the swing change.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Why was it only an hour? That's my point.
We talked about this last night, and this is what – this is what I was expecting too. You know, talking about deep dive, right? So if you're going to talk about the swing changes that he made, right, in 98 or from essentially the middle of 97 to when he started figuring out around the middle of 99. So
May of 99 is when Butch said Tiger called him and said, "Hey, I've got it."
Yeah. So it was about 2 years here. So you're going through a 2 year stretch here. So obviously, there's a lot of things that happen within 2 years of time. I mean, you know, I think we all can think about 2 years in our lives where it's like, oh man, you know, a lot of stuff happened there. So. And we can find videos where Butch kind of hints onto it on YouTube or whatever, but why not spend 10 minutes or 15 minutes talking about every single thing that you wanted Tiger to work on?
The swing change, the drills, how difficult it was for Tiger. Because one thing, and we talked about the good, I really liked the quote from Butch where he said, you know, Tiger came to me and I told him, well, let's gradually change your swing and get it where we wanted to. And he said Tiger told him, no, I don't like it. I don't like the way it looks. I don't like the way it feels. I want to change it right now, today.
And that's when he started.
Won the Masters by 12 shots, by the way.
And then that's not enough. He doesn't want it enough. He said, I can, you know, anyone can time it for a day or a week, which is true at that level. But, you know, he wanted to do it over the course of his whole career. Which
he didn't want his swing to be so reliant on timing.
Which, like, exactly. Yeah. Which essentially he did, and did it to the greatest extent anyone had ever seen. And, you know, for me, like you said, there's just so much more that could have been looked into. You know, like you said, the last dance has changed, you know, kind of, it almost might, like I said, I'm still not finished with it, but it might change, you know, how not just sports documentaries, but all documentaries are done in general, you know, going forward. It could be a game changer.
It's the benchmark going forward.
It really is. And so, you know, so obviously there's that pedestal, and, you know, for something as, you know, as a, Tiger Woods is the equivalent to Michael Jordan in golf. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, they are almost the same, at the same level. You know, I mean, even, you know, like we have the, you know, debate, you know, LeBron versus, you know, MJ is kind of the same with Tiger and Jack. They just kind of flip-flop, you know, and so it's kind of like, you know, kind of pick your opposite of pick your poison again, you know, kind of thing. But so to try to condense everything in an hour is just so hard to do when you're breaking down. You know, when you're just, it's hard to do an hour on one of these majors, let alone try to do, you know, four of them. You
yeah,
know?
Again, and that's going back to the last dance. I mean, I really think they would have done it more justice if they would have seriously broken it into 4 weeks and every Sunday night put it on for an hour. And, you know, the first Sunday, we get the 2000 U.S. Open and everything that led up to it. Second Sunday, we get the at St. Andrews, we get the Open Championship. The following Sunday, we get the PGA. And then the following Sunday, we get the Masters. And that would have been so much better because we could have gotten so much deeper. I wanted a deep dive. I didn't want the surface stories. I didn't.
And that's about all we got.
I mean, there was
maybe a couple of things that hit me, you know, like there was the Miguel Angel Jimenez story where he walked over to Butch and said, you know, where's the playoff for me and Ernie for the other tournament, you know, because someone
at Pebble.
At Pebble, yes, exactly, because they both finished T2. So, I mean, there was a couple of good little hits in there. There was an interesting story, I'd never heard it, about how Stevie got on Tiger's bag, you know, where he called him like three times.
Stevie had a friend who
could really impersonate Tiger's voice really good, so he thought it was his friend and kept hanging up
on
him.
So he hung up on him twice.
Yeah, and it ended up being Tiger, and he's like, no, oh, shit.
He didn't hang up on his friend twice, just so we're clear.
Yeah, yes.
He hung up on Tiger Woods two times. Two times he hung up on Tiger Woods.
Thinking it was someone else. So, I mean, that's kind of a... You know, luckily it ended up working out for Stevie, obviously. And then, but you know, like I said, we mentioned it last week, the ball story at the U.S. Open, you know, and we didn't mention this, and they forgot to mention the telecast too, which I think is very unjust. Tiger did not have a three putt during the U.S. Open that week.
Yeah. Which wasn't mentioned.
Was not mentioned.
Didn't have a three putt on the Poe at Pebble. I mean, we've all seen those guys play at Pebble on the Poe in the afternoon, late tee times. Come on, man.
Yeah.
No three putts. Get out of here.
Not for over 72 holes. And I mean, it's not like they have humongous greens or anything, but even, you know, the tour average on not three putting is 30 something feet, and you can have a 30 something footer on every green out there, you know?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, so, I mean, for him to go through that stretch is.
They said they made a big deal out of no bunkers at St. Andrews.
Which was good. That was good. Yeah, that they made sure to highlight that. I did like, I thought the best part about it was when they went into the PGA Championship.
I agree.
And
with Bob May?
Well, yeah.
Yep.
I think that was good. I did not, I didn't realize until kind of just talking, or even when I saw the results and, you know, I could see it, but I didn't really process it. You know, if Tiger was in that tournament, Bob May would have won by five shots.
Bob May would have won by five shots.
He would have been a five-stroke major.
But he had zero career wins coming into the tournament.
Zero career wins.
They put the resumes up side by side last night. That really was the best part of the dock was the PGA, far and away.
I completely agree. And I think that Scott Van Pelt, who was on there, which is also why I think this could have gone longer, because they got some, you know, good. They had Faraday, Tirico, Scott Van Pelt,
Buttermann,
Stevie, Bob May. You know, they had all these. David Duvall.
Yeah. You really? I mean, it would have been so cool if they could have gotten Ernie. I'm sure they reached out and he couldn't do it, but
yeah.
I mean, he finished runner up at Pebble and at St. Andrews.
Exactly. So. Yeah. So yeah, that would have been cool as well. The coolest part for me was for the, you know, about the PGA Championship. You know, was how they went into, you know, they kind of broke it down a lot more than the other tournaments, you know, where they, you know, like they talked about the par putt he made on 15.
Well, they took us through the whole back nine, you know,
yeah.
From Bob May making, you know, the bomb at 11 for birdies at 10 and 11, Tiger making the par putt at 15, and then, you know, Bob May missing the 4 flat footer coming back, and it was Bob May, pardon me, this is Memorial Day, so we do have the dogs at the house hanging out with us. So it was cool, though, to hear Bob May talk about, you know, I've never thought I hit a bad putt. I put it outside left. It didn't come back. And maybe it's because they had Bob May, who was such an integral part of one of the best battles we've ever seen in golf, on, was a huge reason why that was the best part of the documentary.
Well, and think about this too. Scott Van Pelt, I mean, he said the quote just better than anyone could have said it. It really didn't hit. And I never thought about it this way until he said it. You know, Bob May would be remembered more for, you know, having that duel with Tiger, then if yes. Tiger wasn't in the tournament, he even would have won by five. Because think about someone like Sean McKeel, you know, who won.
Who?
Exactly. Yeah. Won Chris Hamilton?
Is that his name?
Todd Hamilton.
See?
Exactly.
Chris is probably his brother. Cousin. Yeah. I don't know. Who cares?
So Ben Curtis, you know, you're talking about all these different people who have these no names that have major championships, but yet, you know, how often do you hear their names ever spoken?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And, you know, and all of a sudden now that, you know, Bob May, he gets talked about, you know, almost any time because it was, you know, it was the...
Yeah, and the Van Pelt quote that you're referencing, he said, Bob May is remembered more because he lost to Tiger than he would have been if he won, because he's remembered more for what it took for Tiger to beat him. And it took perfection. It took excellence. It took Tiger running in a 30-footer on the first playoff hole. And the still shots of Tiger mid-run with the point of the hole. I mean, that is truly one of the greatest moments in the history of golf when Tiger ran that putt in.
I'm quick Tiger question before we wrap up our thoughts on the Tiger Slam. If Tiger hadn't been through his everything that happened in the end of 2009 and into 2010, do you think Wai Yang would be looked at differently as more of a Tiger slayer than he is now? I mean, obviously we hate him because of that he took that major away from Tiger, but honestly, it doesn't even get brought up anymore. Like, I can't tell you the last time anyone brought it up besides us, you know?
Nobody thinks or talks about it.
Yeah,
I talked about my hatred for Wai Yang last week, but...
Yeah, but you don't ever hear anyone else talk about it.
Really.
I mean, you hear Bob May's name brought up all the time, you know?
All the time.
Not just from everywhere, you know? And so
part of that, too, is we love remembering the 2000 PGA Championship, and we hate remembering the 2009 PGA Championship. I think we've all just selectively, you know, selective amnesia. I think we've just kind of blocked it out of our memories.
I think that's exactly right. And that's why I was asking. I didn't know if we had blocked it out because it was the only time Tiger held a 54-hole lead in a major and did not win. And so, you know, obviously that was...
Psychologists say that you can have selective amnesia if you want to block out a painful memory from your past.
Yeah.
I don't think this is exactly what they mean.
Yeah. But we're in the same ballpark. I thought that's an interesting way to look at it. Even someone who was able to slay Tiger doesn't have the same remembrance as someone who even put up what seemed like even a better fight, but Wai Yang held out to the end. But we're going to stop talking about that. One, going back to the documentary, and I'm being pretty harsh on it, but I thought the intro could not have been any more disrespectful to Tiger.
See, you and I disagreed on the intro. So the intro, if you didn't get to catch the documentary last night, basically, they had a Tiger Woods lookalike, but you never see his face. They get him walking from behind. He's in a Stanford hoodie. He's sitting on a couch with all four of the trophies on the coffee table. They've got him taking a couple hacks on the range.
It's very obvious to tell that it's not Tiger.
It's not Tiger Swing. But I thought, you know, from a cinematic perspective, I could tell what they were trying to do there, which is like, obviously they don't have footage of Tiger sitting on his couch with his feet propped up looking at the trophies, and they wanted that visual. So it didn't bother me as much as it bothered you, but I see where you're coming from.
Well, it's just, like the way I would see it is that if you wanted to do something like that, because for anyone who hasn't seen yet, going back and watch the intro, that it's not just showing that the Tiger looked like that. They're throwing back clips, you know, of Tiger in his younger days, yes. You know, because
it's mixed in.
Yeah. And one thing too that they're doing is the lookalike is wearing a lot of the similar clothes. Like when Tiger won the 94 US Amateur and
with the striped shirt. Yeah.
So they have him like walking back, you know, backwards
with the bucket hat on.
Yeah. With the bucket hat on. So the lookalike is trying to wear the same clothes that Tiger was wearing. And for me, it was like, if you're going to do something like that where it's clearly not Tiger, the only reason you should do it is to inspire other people that they can do it, you know, that they can get to that point. And the reason that it clearly wasn't that was one of the clips that they showed was the lookalike pulling off Frank Tiger's head cover, and the driver was like the 975D, you know. So it's like if you were going to do that, you need to show someone now who's a modern player, you know, trying to be like Tiger. You know, that's the only way that I would see, because – if they had just done that without, you know, like if they didn't have rights to show some of the Tiger highlights or whatever, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, it's like they threw in 50% Tiger highlights and they would just flip to some random guy walking, holding balls, clearly making a swing that's not Tiger. I'm still very mad about that.
Let me put it this way. I did not think that it was like great, over the top, phenomenal. I just wasn't bothered by it.
Yeah,
but I didn't come away thinking, "Oh my gosh, that intro, man, that was great."
Well, I mean, you've seen the last. Like I said, I haven't finished the last dance. You've seen. I mean, are they going to put someone that looks like Michael Jordan just back shooting jump shots? You know, just
yeah, over, probably not.
Probably not exactly. And yeah. So that's,
now, if they were to do an episode 11 and 12 and do the Wizards days and then the Bobcats days, they might
would.
Have a look-alike.
They probably would.
Probably couldn't get MJ to come in and talk about all that. But.
No, he don't want to do. I wouldn't want to either if I was him. But you know, that just kind of goes to show. I think that, you know, to sum everything up, we going into it, I think he kind of. You had the hope that at least one of the two events would strike. You know, either the match would be good or the documentary would slam home. And then you thought hopefully the one other one won. And then, you know, early on we thought, you know, I mean, you and me were talking, I was texting my friends, you know, like I thought the match would be over by like hole 12 or 13, you know.
Yeah. And for lack of better terms, the match was a grand slam.
It was.
And Tiger Slam was a dud.
It was a dud. I would give it... It may be, it's on the same playing ground, if not maybe just a smidge better than the NBC telecast. I mean, I thought they did a bad job with it. Yeah, I really did.
The more and more, so just getting to see the Tiger highlights, I think whenever I first got done watching it, I was like, I love Tiger. But then whenever I thought back on it, I was like, I don't think they did that justice.
No, they definitely didn't. And I mean, there was a couple of things that I said that people that hadn't heard it before, you know, like there was a lot of things said that obviously I had heard and you had heard before, so maybe it didn't hit us home, you know.
The like, Stevie story about the golf ball.
Exactly. And the,
a lot of stuff like that.
Like when we were talking about last week, the most underrated putt of Tiger's career to get into playoff with Bob May and, you know, Stevie, I had remembered that from watching an old documentary. You know, he was like, Stevie asked Tiger, you know, like what are you thinking over that putt, you know, to get in? And he literally said, it's a 6-footer. My mom can make that putt. You know, I'm Tiger fucking Woods, you know, I'm supposed to make this putt, you know. And, you know, I had heard that before. And so for anyone who hadn't heard that, they would probably think that was really cool, because I still think it's kind of cool, you know. It's a good thought process to have, you know, if you're over a short putt and you're like, you know, my mom or my spouse, you know, my 3-year-old kid can make this putt, you know. It's kind of a cool, you know, kind of relaxes you in the moment kind of thing, you know. So I thought that was a cool little thing, but obviously I and you had probably already heard of that, you know. So there was maybe we had already done so much deep diving into it that there's right. only, you know, that maybe there's only so much more that can be expunged, but I just think there's a lot more that goes into it. And I think that eventually someone will do a Last Dance. More than likely what they'll do is they're not going to do a Last Dance Tiger Slam version. They'll do a Last Dance.
His whole career.
Yes.
His
whole life and career, which.
And hopefully that's done right, because I can't wait.
That would be amazing. So for the Last Dance, before we sum all this up, so did they start at when Michael first joined the Bulls?
They started in 97, 98, and then they would like go back. So they would go back, because it was the Last Dance, it was about the last season. So they would go back to when Michael was in college, in high school even, and then go back to when he was in college, and then cut to 97, 98, and then go back to when he was drafted, and then cut back to 97, 98, and then go back. So, but they had him there commenting on everything. So hopefully one day we'll get something similar with Tiger, where Tiger sits down with an iPad, watches old highlights of himself, watches everything, you know, all the personal stuff that he went through, and just kind of lays it all out for us, because that would, I mean... That would be unreal.
You know, in all honesty, I wouldn't be surprised if something like that was already in the works before Tiger made his comeback, this last comeback, because I mean,
right.
you could start to hear the hint of it, you know, around the golfing world and just the sporting world, you know, of people just finally remembering how great Tiger was and, you know, the stuff that he did, you know, people for finally bringing up the 15 shot win, you know, just the Grand Slam, winning all these tournaments, having at the time, which was 79 or 80 wins, you know, before he came back. And then, you started to see that people were appreciating the greatness. So I think that once Tiger,
Like with Mike, they waited until he was old enough that the younger generation doesn't really know how great he was. Mm-hmm. I think they'll do the same thing with Tiger.
Probably so.
They'll wait until Tiger's 55 or 60, and there'll be a bunch of kids like, who was Tiger Woods? And they'll be like, okay, this was Tiger
this
Woods.
This was Tiger, yeah. And hopefully they'll be able to translate the greatness that was there onto the screen over hopefully, which is if it's over his whole career, hopefully it's like a 25 part series, you know, because that's what it needs to
25
be.
25 hours, 50 hours.
Exactly. We
1 hour per year.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. Exactly. So basically, to sum everything up, the match yesterday, fabulous. I give it
probably
an A plus. Exactly. Like I said, we're nitpicking by saying
the golf, the trash talk, the telecast, Chuck,
yeah.
JT was great. A plus for me.
Well, also one last thing. What did you think about them have already filmed Barkley playing the hole and then showing it at the end?
Yeah, I thought because of the weather forecast and everything, it was smart.
That's probably what they needed to do. What I thought they should have done was that, you know, flip flop it. Like if it's already recorded, show Barkley at the start.
Good with that. I think it would have been cool also to have Tiger and Phil and Peyton and Tom out there with Mike's commenting as well.
Exactly. I agree with that.
But well, you know,
and but we also thought too the hole was, you know, it was going to end on 12 or 13. Then, you know, like we thought, oh, they're just going to have to walk to 18. You know,
right.
Skip five holes to watch Barkley play this hole. So I guess
I think they wanted it to go longer for TV. You know, whenever Tiger told him to pick up the 6 footer on 10,
yeah,
I was like, okay, we're trying to.
Yeah, they were three up here at that point. Which was good. And then all of a sudden they almost gave it away because they eagled the next hole. You know, I mean, it almost came back
by themselves.
That's an A+. Tiger Slam documentary, C- at best, just because C's get degrees, just because they at least expressed the greatness that it was. You know, they didn't.
And the 99 PGA was good. Bob May was good. So
They didn't.
I won't give it a D like I gave the NBC telecast last week, but. Yeah, C minus.
And they didn't have at the end. They have all the people they had on there asking, you know, was it a Grand Slam or not? And luckily, they didn't have any idiots on there to say that it wasn't.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So, and what I think Butch said it the best. He said, "Well, no one else has ever done so. Call whatever the fuck you want."
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
So, you know.
Nailed it.
And that's how anyone should call it.
So. Nailed it. Exactly. You know, you want to put a trophy on your table this summer? Head on down to Bushwood, play in the Washita Valley with Taylor and myself. If you beat me, impressive, I guess, kind of, a little bit. If you beat Taylor, very impressive. Come try your hand at Bushwood down in Chickasha. Go get you some rounds down there. Course is in great shape, greening up every single time we make the short drive down to Chickasha to play Bushwood Golf and Country Club under new ownership and doing great. Had a lot of fun yesterday with the match and the documentary, even though it disappointed just a bit. Glad everyone could join us today on this Memorial Day. One final shout out and thank you to all of those who've sacrificed so that we can live our lives the way we do and sit around and talk about
golf. Amen.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks everyone for joining us. We're back later in the week with more 73rd Hole.